Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as
Christian Wood,
he's our guy.
We still got
Ja'Shawn Tate.
Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Despite the best efforts of DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Gordon, the Rockets are able to hold on 103-102 for the victory against the Detroit Pistons, moving to 5-9 on the season, now 2-5 on the road. What's up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. This game really was like, I mean, looking at the way that this game felt, it was kind of like when you try to heat up like a hot pocket in the microwave and it's like super scalding hot, warm on the outsides, and then just freezing cold in the middle, because that's basically how the Rockets play felt. They came out of the gate so strong, 34-21 start to this game. They were just firing on all cylinders in the first quarter, and then everything just started falling apart in the second and third quarters. I mean, it was all Detroit for the rest of the way of that game. The Rockets led by as many as 20, and they were trailing by 4 going into the final frame, and thankfully they were able to turn things around in that fourth quarter. So really, this was like the Rockets hot pocket game is kind of where I'm coming from. But to me, like, there's no question about who the player of the game is, and it's actually co-players of the game, and that's David Nwaba and Sterling Brown. Nwaba finished the night. He had 13 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 6 of 12 shooting, did miss his 2 three-pointers, hit his only free throw that he attempted, played 21 minutes, was a plus 12 in his 21 minutes, and he and Sterling Brown, and then Brown as well, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, no steals or blocks, but was 5 of 9 shooting from the floor, 4 of 6 from behind the arc. So 12 of his 14 points coming from behind the three-point line. And for both of them, they both had 3 offensive rebounds apiece. They were all over the offensive glass, really aggressive. And the game really turned around in the fourth quarter because of those two guys. And I'll talk more about that stretch specifically here in just a moment. But really, those two guys kind of won the Rockets the game despite the best efforts of Eric Gordon and DeMarcus Cousins, who were a combined 8 of 31 shooting, just 2 of 12 from behind the arc. Eric Gordon did find his way to the free throw line a fair bit, shot 7 of 9 there. But Eric Gordon on the evening, 20 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists. Cousins, despite his offensive struggles, was still a presence in the rebounding department, which is much needed, but just had 5 points on the night. Again, 2 of 16 shooting, really rough there. 15 rebounds, though, is impressive. 7 assists, did have 2 blocks. So, and I'm going to talk about DeMarcus Cousins in segment 3 a little bit, because there's a lot of people running around saying he's washed. I really don't think that's the case. I think that there's, obviously some areas of his game that need a little brushing up on, and we'll talk about that in segment 3, as well as the Kevin Porter Jr. trade, which I haven't had a chance to talk about yet, so I'll save that for kind of the tail end, focus on the recap of this one, and then we'll get to that point a little bit later on. But the Rockets really, like, I try to sit down and I try to think, okay, what is the one deciding factor in this game? What is the reason that the Rockets, won this game? The Rockets won this game because the Pistons can't hit free throws. That's basically what it was. Is it boiled down to the Pistons missing a bunch of free throws down the line, and also just over the course of the entire game, Pistons shot just 25 of 37 at the free throw line. They had such a disproportionate free throw rate compared to the Rockets. So the Pistons shooting 67.6% at the line. Rockets went to the line 20 times. So the Pistons made more free throws than the Rockets even got to attempt, and the Rockets shot 15 of 20, so they also didn't do themselves any like major favors at the free throw line, but it wasn't as egregious as missing 12 of them. They only missed 5, shooting 75%. Pistons managed to shoot the lights out of the ball. They really did. 15 of 32 from behind the arc, 46.9% from three. It was inside the arc. They just could not buy a single bucket inside the arc. And part of that, I'm going to credit to the Rockets' defense. They did a really good job with Jeremy Grant. You know, largely shut him down for most of the evening. Grant did get a majority of his 21 points at the charity stripe, shot 10 of 13 at the free throw line, but just 4 of 15 shooting overall, 3 of 6 from behind the arc. So he was just 1 of 9 inside the three-point line. Blake Griffin, really quiet evening, just 2 of 8 shooting, 7 points. Ellington and DeLon Wright, they were the two guys that kind of were keeping them in this game, 18 points apiece. Ellington, 6 of 10, 3-point shooting. Cannot give that guy any room, and there were plenty of occasions where the Rockets did just that. He's a lights-out shooter. And then Wright with 2 of 3, 3-point shooting on the way to his 18 points as well. So really, looking at how this game kind of wrapped up at the tail end of that fourth quarter, the Pistons had so many chances to win this game. They really did. And by hanging so many points, you know, at the charity stripe, they did not do themselves any favors whatsoever in this one. But there were some cool moments from this game. The Benny Mac little like weeble wobble three-pointer where he faked out whichever Pistons player went flying by him. Jay Sean Tate had a couple nice slams in this one, some really great defensive possessions from him. David Nwaba had some really nice cleanup blocks where you think the play is pretty much just over and he comes soaring in either from the weak side or he just recovers and is able to, you know, just swat the ever-living hell out of the ball. David Nwaba blocks are like really aggressive. Like when he goes up to block a shot, it is like a very aggressive block and I am absolutely here for it. We had DeMarcus Cousins contemplating existence after being called for, I believe, a blocking foul and falling down. And just look, Cousins gets, and this is part of his struggles, right? Is he gets zero love from the referees. Like DeMarcus Cousins already struggled with the refs before he became a Houston Rocket, and then he became a Houston Rocket, and refs already don't like the Houston Rockets. So I really feel for the guy, and it's really hard for me to like want to sit here and be like hypercritical of his offensive struggles when the dude gets hammered constantly offensively and doesn't get a single whistle. And like, that's gotta suck. Like it really does. Like the man, he didn't go to a free throw line to the free throw line at all in this one. He had 16 shot attempts. 10 of them were in the paint. And he only made one of those. So he was 1 for 10 shooting inside the 3-point line. But he could have, you know, reasonably gone to the free throw line on a few of those. The Rockets just don't get a favorable whistle, and neither does Cousins. So, like, that's, like, it's compounded by the fact that now he is a Houston Rocket. And so that just, like, I feel for the guy. That kind of sucks. So the screenshot that I threw up on Twitter where he's just contemplating existence laying on the ground, like, he blessed the timeline with that one. And then Oladipo, another kind of a quiet night. Like, Eric Gordon, really inefficient night, just 6 to 15 shooting. Did have 20 points, but just, you know, not a great showing to get to that spot. And then Victor Oladipo, 4 of 16 as well. Like, Victor Oladipo, Eric Gordon, and DeMarcus Cousins didn't really, I don't know, I don't want to say that they didn't want to win this game. They just had some really rough nights. And despite that, all the other Rockets role players showed up in a big way. For, you know, the bench brigade with Brown, Nwaba, and McLemore all played heavy minutes. KJ Martin Jr. and Mason Jones only playing 3 minutes apiece. And then PJ Tucker and Jay Sean Tate, the other two starters in this one, in the absence of Christian Wood due to the ankle injury. Everybody really showed up except for those three. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those where the role players did their jobs spectacularly. And then the big three in this one with Oladipo, Gordon, and Cousins just kind of barely did enough to keep the Rockets in this one. But Oladipo did have a couple, there was that little series where he had basically the same identical, of his four made field goals, two of them were identical shots where he drove to the basket, did like that reverse layup with his right hand on the left side of the basket. And then he did that once, then came down and did it again. And it was an identical play. And then he tried to come down and do it a third time, which I thought was like hilarious. You know, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it. He wasn't able to finally convert it on the third try, but it looked like something out of a video game where things were glitching and he just kept trying the same move over and over. But just, you know, again, a really rough night for those three combined. Just 3 of 18 shooting from behind the arc. I don't even want to do the math on what their overall shooting was. What was it? Hang on, let's see. 12 of 47 shooting. That's so bad. Wow. The Rockets had zero business winning this game. They really didn't. Like, it was basically all Pistons after the first quarter. So the entire second, the entire third, and then the Rockets had a really good run at the top of the fourth, and then the Pistons kind of took back over the second half of the fourth quarter. So the Rockets had zero business winning this game, and yet they somehow escaped by the skin of their teeth. And so I want to talk about that top of the fourth quarter stretch, as well as the ball movement in the first quarter, and a couple more individual performances coming up here in just a second after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. NFL playoffs are here, NBA season is in full swing, and Major League Baseball is not far away either. And look, there is only one place that has you covered, and one place that we here at Locked On Rockets trust, and that is betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use our very own promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, for your own 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Look, there's great games all night, every night across the NBA to throw some money on. So don't sit on the sideline anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, recapping the Rockets' 103-102 win against the Detroit Pistons, their first win in 4 games. They had that 3-game losing skid after picking up the very first win in the post-James Harden era against the Spurs, so now they are 5-9 on the season. Pistons falling to 3-12, just 2-6 at home. Now, I want to recap that stretch at the top of the fourth quarter, because this is why Sterling Brown and David Nwaba are your co-Rockets players of the game, or player of the game, whatever, to me, because they absolutely turned the tide of the game at the top of that fourth quarter, both with their defense and with just everything that they were doing offensively. So here's the 13-4 run at the top of the fourth quarter. The Rockets held the Pistons to just 4 points across almost 6 minutes at the top of the fourth quarter. So they went into the quarter down 81-77. And the offensive possessions for the Rockets went like this. A Ben McLemore three-pointer off of a Sterling Brown assist, a David Nwaba layup, a David Nwaba offensive rebound plus layup plus the made free throw, a Brown offensive rebound plus layup, a Brown three-pointer. That's your 13 Rockets points to only 4 points made by the Pistons in that same stretch, which gave the Rockets a 90-85 lead with a little bit more than 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That stretch got them back in the game. And that lineup at the top of the fourth quarter, where they were running essentially the small ball lineup, the Tate wagon lineup, if you will, that lineup was just a nightmare defensively, a nightmare for the Pistons defensively, because they were able to switch everything. They had the right amount of size. Everybody out there was hustling. It was a, you know, in spurts, the small ball tuck wagon, Tate wagon, lineups, whatever, they can work and they can be really, really effective in spurts. And we've seen that so far this season, where Silas has opted to use those small ball lineups where they can switch everything and kind of revert back to that type of defensive scheme. And there's been a really, really solid amount of success so far doing that. It's just not one of those things that you can do over an extended period, because you will struggle to rebound the ball occasionally. You'll have some deficiencies in that lineup. But in this one, it worked, and it absolutely kind of gave the Rockets just enough juice to be able to kind of coast to the finish line after that run, after they took over the lead. But they did their best to try and cough this game away. I mean, I do want to talk about the ball movement in the first quarter, because I think that's a big thing that really helped them get off to a strong start. But looking at this one at the tail end, I mean, Jayshon Tate, despite having a really, really solid game, you know, had some foul trouble in this one. He had 13 points, three rebounds, one assist, 5 of 8 shooting, did shoot 2 of 4 from behind the arc. He really is kind of fitting into that P.J. Tucker mold where he's hitting those corner threes. And, I mean, for all intents and purposes, when P.J. Tucker gets moved on, if P.J. Tucker gets traded and moves on from the Rockets franchise, if Rafael Stone is able to find an adequate package for him, Jayshon Tate should be the starting power forward moving forward. He's absolutely the P.J. Tucker light, but with, you know, more playmaking, a bit more inside game, just a better all-around player. But he's still prone to those rookie mistakes. He's still prone to those youthful mistakes, and one of those came in this game, and it was just gut-wrenching almost when it happened, where the Rockets are up 195. Jeremy Grant makes a three-pointer, and he gets fouled by Jayshon Tate closing out on a three-point shot. It's just one of those moments where you appreciate Tate's like hustle and his grit, and he's trying so hard every possession, but then you're just like pulling your hair out because you're like, there's no need to contest that hard on a closeout three. Like, just get your hand up, but don't land in the guy's, you know, shooting space, or don't get in the guy's landing space, and don't foul him. And, you know, it was just one of those really tough things to stomach. And then Jeremy Grant missed the free throw. So again, the Pistons were trying to throw this game away too. It really felt like kind of at the end, it was two teams really trying to throw this game away. I mean, even like looking at the final play of the game that the Rockets had drawn up with Eric Gordon driving the ball in and getting blocked by Jeremy Grant, kind of jumping up in the air, sort of in no man's land. And like, it was almost like a half-hearted jumper, like shot put jumper attempt with from like about 10 feet away from the basket. And Sterling Brown even got the offensive rebound. And then Victor Oladipo bricks his three-pointer to follow that, which gives the Pistons the final 3.5 seconds to try and make something happen. So shout out P.J. Tucker for getting ultimately what was the final stop of the game. P.J. Tucker said in post-game that he wasn't sure when he had fouled Jeremy Grant. He was trying to hold off for as long as possible and wait to foul Jeremy Grant. That was the plan, was to foul Jeremy Grant, but he was trying to wait until after the buzzer sounded. And quick, you know, sidebar, it's really annoying. And I think Adam Spolin has been commenting on this on Twitter, and I totally agree. Not being able to hear the in-game buzzers or like referee whistles or anything like that really takes away from the feel of the game. And I don't know if there's an adequate way to fix that based on how these broadcasts are being done kind of remotely for the Rockets broadcasting team and whatnot. But it's just not a great feel, like at the end of a game, right? Not being able to hear the buzzer, not being able to hear the referees blow their whistles, like all that stuff. It really does kind of take away from the overall experience of watching a basketball game. And it's not something I really noticed it felt like something was missing. And then Adam Spolin started talking about it, and I was like, yeah. And now like I'm noticing it, which is frustrating. So I'm sorry for pointing this out if you haven't noticed it, but now you're probably going to start noticing it. So for that, I apologize, but the NBA should absolutely try and find a way to alleviate that, to fix that situation. But P.J. Tucker did a good job on that final defensive possession. He forced Jeremy Grant all the way to the rim into a kind of an awkward, extending finger roll shot, which ultimately did go in, but it was after the final buzzer had sounded. So P.J. Tucker held his ground for the 3.5 seconds that he needed to win the game for the Rockets. They went back, did the review, and it was clear as day that the ball was still in Jeremy Grant's hands, and P.J. Tucker's body hadn't connected with Jeremy Grant to issue the foul. And so Rockets won the game. And I mean, it was kind of an anticlimactic way to win the game, sitting there waiting on a referee review, but waiting for, I think it was Bill Kennedy who had to announce it, who is always a delight on the little referee cam that we get now when they talk directly to the audience, which is cool. But anywho, I mean, they ended the game on a strong note, I guess, with the P.J. Tucker possession. I shouldn't say they ended the game on a strong note. They won the game. Let's face it. Like, it was not a super impressive victory. Now, there's still some good takeaways from this one, but it was not, you know, an impressive victory by any stretch of the imagination, because they really did try to throw this game away throughout multiple points of this one. So I do want to talk about that ball movement in the first quarter moving forward. Do want to talk about DeMarcus Cousins, his individual play, as well as the Kevin Porter Jr. deal, and we'll get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking about the Rockets' win against the Detroit Pistons, 103-102. Now, this game, they got off to such a scorching hot start in that first quarter. They really did. Like, over the course of the game, you know, things change, you know, move, you know, obviously there's an ebb and a flow to the game. But overall, they kind of, they matched the Pistons in most categories. The Pistons with a bit of an advantage in the fast break numbers, 16-9. Overall second chance points, Houston getting a slight edge, 22-16. Points in the paint, Rockets were dominant, 42-32. And then they generated a lot of turnovers. Again, the defense in this one was exceptional for certain stretches of the game. Rockets forcing 19 Pistons turnovers and generating 25 points off of those turnovers. They got so many easy opportunities in transition because of their defense. So for two games in a row now, because this was my concern last game, was their offense. Their offense, you know, at times has just completely bottomed out and struggled. And it feels like it doesn't need to be that way. It feels like it shouldn't really be happening as awkwardly as it does. But for some reason, they're falling apart offensively. I mean, in the first quarter in this one, they shot 6 of 12 from behind the arc after the first 12 minutes of this game. And then they proceeded to only make 8 more three-pointers the rest of the way. Like, you know, they just, for some reason, they came out of the gates scorching hot, great ball movement, but then that just kind of disappeared a little bit after the first frame. Again, they had 10 assists on 12 made shots in the first quarter, and then the rest of the way, they only generated 14 assists on the rest of their, 25 made shots? Am I doing the math right? Yeah, 25 made shots. So it's just one of those where, as far as the ball movement in the first quarter, being able to replicate that and keep that going over the course of a game is really important because it keeps everybody feeling involved. And obviously shooting and like shots actually falling is kind of a nice feeling when that happens. But replicating that and keeping that going moving forward, one, that's what John Wall will help with. Getting him back, having a legitimate point guard back in the lineup will help as far as the distinct drop-offs in there, because again, you're watching Eric Gordon and Victor Oladipo out there as like the primary ball handlers, and they can do it for stretches, but they're just not primary facilitators is the problem. Even DeMarcus Cousins, for as good of a passer as he was kind of running the offense through him for stretches of this game, he had 5 turnovers. You know, at times there's just miscommunication. There's just, you know, getting a legitimate floor general back out there with John Wall is going to do wonders for this team, and having the role players and the pieces around him to make that actually work. Really, the fact that they were able to win this game missing 3 starters in John Wall, Christian Wood, and Daniel House Jr., this team continues to show a lot of fight. Like, they haven't hung their heads yet. They haven't just decided to give up. They haven't rolled over. This team continues to really show a lot of fight. And DeMarcus Cousins is, you know, I read through his stat line earlier. He did impact this game in more ways than just scoring. So, you know, the offensive struggles are not as frustrating if he hadn't been rebounding and facilitating at the rate that he was. But Cousins is just one of those players, and very, very akin to one Russell Westbrook that we became very, very familiar with over the course of last season. Boogie is just one of those guys that gets so frustrated, like so easily on the court. Like after one or two things don't go his way, like he doesn't get a call or he, you know, drives to the rim and misses a shot or can't quite get a put back, you know, doesn't quite have the handle on the ball, whatever it may be, but especially like missing those shots offensively, he just gets angry. Like he gets so mad. Like you can see it on the court taking place. You can watch the gradual transition. And then he just plays so much worse. Like when he's angry, like he starts getting in his own head about things, and he really just needs to take a deep breath, maybe do a little woosah, you know, rub his earlobes, whatever it is, and just relax a little bit. I think Matt Bullard said it really well. Like, Boogie, he just needs to slow down a little bit. You know, he's just trying a little bit too hard offensively to make things happen. Whereas if he slows things down just a little bit and kind of lets the game come to him, I feel like he's going to find a lot more success offensively. Again, he was really trying to force the issue in this one and only made two shots out of 16 attempts. Like, that's got to suck. Went so far as to go make an Instagram post after the game talking about struggles and, you know, you can't succeed if you don't have a little bit of struggle in your life beforehand or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, but like 2 of 16 will do that to you, I guess. Again, I don't think Cousins is washed. I think his skill set is still really useful for, you know, again, 10 to 15 minutes per game behind Christian Wood. And again, in this one, he did impact the game in a really positive way in certain areas, but then just, again, he was just trying to do too much offensively. And I think it's just Cousins, you know, I don't want to try and like psychoanalyze him, right? But this is a guy that used to be a perennial all-star, that used to be, you know, the go-to guy of a team, you know, the franchise guy for the Kings, and kind of had a bit of a reality check, obviously, when he was traded to the Pelicans. But even then, he and AD were this dynamic twin tower duo for that half season. And, you know, things looked really, really good for a little while for him. And he's just been battling to come back from these injuries, and I think there's part of him that just wants to be the old DeMarcus Cousins so bad, and he's just not there yet physically, and he may never be again. He may never be the old DeMarcus Cousins, but that doesn't mean he's completely washed. That doesn't mean he can't be a really beneficial NBA player. He just has to be more comfortable with what his role is now as an NBA player rather than what it was before. So I think that's something that we're going to have to pay close attention to and watch as he, you know, progresses through the season. And I think John Wall is a big part of that. I think Wall, you know, is going to be able to, when he's back in the lineup, you know, they have such a tight relationship, those two guys, and they go so far back that I don't think Wall's going to have any issue telling Cousins, hey, dude, you got to stop jacking up threes. Like, you got to just chill out a little bit. Like, set good screens, get good boards, make the right passes. You know, we'll get you some post-up opportunities, you know, down low against some easy switches and stuff. But, like, you need to take a chill pill and just we'll find a way to make this work. So hopefully John Wall can be that kind of guiding voice for DeMarcus Cousins once he's actually back on the floor instead of sitting fashionably, I will say, on the sideline. No Bumblebee outfit for John Wall in this one. He was wearing a really nice looking sweater. So that's your John Wall fashion update. But final thing for this one, and it's not related to this game, although this is a nice win for the Rockets and the first game in a pair of back-to-backs. So they're taking off and they'll be playing in Dallas against the Dallas Mavericks, which is going to be a tough game for them to win with no John Wall, no Christian Wood on Saturday night. So we'll see kind of how that one plays out. I'm not expecting a win based on a lot of different things, but if Eric Gordon and Victor Oladipo and Cousins can kind of have some bounce back games, and if the role players are able to keep up the production that they had in this one, then there's no reason that they can't be competitive, and there's no reason that they might be able to eke out a win. They've still got a really talented, like, 8-9-man roster, even missing two of their starting players. This is a very deep Rockets team. So they might be able to upset the Mavericks in Dallas. Who knows? It's going to be a fun game, though. Now, as far as the Kevin Porter Jr. situation, so Rockets took a flyer. You know, there were a lot of teams kind of inquiring about Kevin Porter Jr., and it looks like the Rockets are the ones that are actually going to be the one to take a flyer on him and see if he can kind of figure himself out with his off-the-court issues. He's a guy who's, you know, had a bit of a troubled life off the court, and then most recently got into a fight in the Cavs locker room when it turns out they gave his old locker to, I think it was Taurean Prince who they gave it to after the Brooklyn Nets deal went through. And so he started throwing food or something in the locker room. I don't know the specifics, but, you know, he's just acting out. And he's had the off the court issues as well. And so he's just a troubled kid, but he's, you know, 20 years old. He had a really good rookie campaign last year. His rookie numbers are very, very similar to one James Harden. They're both southpaws, and he's a guy who's even said that he models his game, that he, you know, his favorite player, his idol, right, is James Harden. That's who he's trying to emulate. His draft comp was James Harden coming out. So I I'm trying to be a little bit realistic here. I don't think Rafael Stone, like, you know, found the next James Harden in Kevin Porter Jr. But if KPJ can become a reliable role player, if he can get his head kind of, you know, on his shoulders right, and it looks like the Rockets plan to really make him spend a lot of time with assistant coach John Lucas, who has a history of kind of helping players and just people with those, really specifically young players, with those kind of off the court issues, and kind of being that guiding voice, that mentoring voice to try and get them back on the right path. And so if John Lucas is able to get a little bit of success with him and kind of get him going in the right direction, then maybe we'll see him in the Rockets rotation down the line. Right now, Steven Silas doesn't have any plans to include Kevin Porter Jr. in the lineup for actual games. We'll see what happens in practices, and we'll see what kind of media availabilities we get coming out of this. But KPJ was quick to update his Twitter bio. It already says H-Town in there, and maybe a fresh start is exactly what he needs, right? Sometimes a fresh start can be kind of a wake-up call for players, whether they be young players, veterans, whatever. When you get shipped out to another team, especially in this type of a situation where essentially the Cavaliers gave him up for free, the Rockets are trading a top 55 protected second-round pick, which is largely never, like, it'll never convey. So the Rockets basically got him for free, and they're just including the pick as, you know, as a way to satisfy the trade requirements of the deal, and they will be absorbing KPJ and his salary into the traded player exception that was generated by Gerald Green at the trade deadline last season. So they're not using the sizable James Harden TPE, which is worth about $10.6 million. They're using the Gerald Green TPE, which is worth about $1.65 million or something like that, to absorb Kevin Porter Jr. So we'll see. We'll see how that pans out. It's a very low-risk, very, very high-reward type move by Rafael Stone, because what it does is, if KPJ pans out in any capacity, becomes even a reliable role player — we're not talking about him becoming a star or the next James Harden — if he even becomes a reliable role player, Rafael Stone got him for free. And that's what it is, right? And if he doesn't pan out, great, they can just waive him. And speaking of waiving players, the Rockets have moved on from Chris Clemens. I wish him the best in his recovery from the Achilles tear. Just never want to see that for any player, you know, let alone a young guy who, you know, obviously he was, you know, struggling a bit in training camp, was probably on the way to getting cut anyways. But you never want to see that for a player. You know, Achilles tears are the worst injury to try and overcome in basketball. So I wish him the best. His time as a Rocket was fun. You know, the Clemenade memories are going to be, you know, something I'll hold on to. But now that the Rockets are not pressed up against the hard cap with James Harden's sizable contract anymore, they're able to kind of bite the bullet on waiving Chris Clemens and not worrying about eating that roster spot and his cost for the rest of the season. And they'll still be able to acquire players and make moves on certain guys. Hint, hint, Gerald Green, hopefully, further down the line, if they deem it worthy. So I think for this one, that's going to be where I wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.